Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave. We took a much-needed week off last week, so it's a little strange in more ways than one to be back today. Here's the scenario. First of all, we were supposed to have two guests today. Now, one of them had to reschedule simply because of the fact that he had to get a plane and he's in the air as we speak, Kim Waters. So I'll talk to him tonight. Hopefully he'll be here tomorrow. And then we have another situation whereby we might have a guest popping in because he's going to be in the region this week. This is one of those last minute situations. We don't know if he is going to call or not. We'll just go on with the show as though we have one guest, who will be Inside the Healer, a.k.a. our friend Norman Woods, who will be here next hour. This is our third time to talk with Norman, and it's always a pleasure. That hour zips by. How many times have you heard a jazz poet? This is someone who takes that role very seriously. Oh, my gosh. The music is just going to be really special today. I'm so glad you could join us. I'm going to scroll down here because the first song I want to play is from the 60s. You know how we do here on Hybrid Jazz. We always like to play something that is vintage, as it were. And actually, we're going to give you a double play. It's Stan Getz with Charlie Byrd from Jazz Samba in the 60s, actually 1963, and then a second one from Charlie Byrd, just because we're in that Brazilian frame of mind. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Nancy Wilson there, Love Won't Let Me Wait, that was co-written by one of my friends on Facebook. And you know how it goes on Facebook, or maybe you don't, but I'll explain. This is just so weird. Sometimes people ask you for friendship, and you don't necessarily make the connection right away. And then when you find out who they are, it blows your mind that you are friends with them. Vinnie Barrett is such a person. She co-wrote Love Won't Let Me Wait, and she has written a ton of songs. One of the coolest ladies on the planet. And then to hear Nancy Wilson sing the song that was originally done for a man, it's just so amazing to get that vibe going in your head of a woman saying all this stuff. Oh, I just love it. From her CD, or actually LP at the time, 1994. So what, cassette? What was a 8-track? They were back then too, right? I should remember. 1994, Love Nancy, the name of the project. And Bobby Eli is the co-writer of that song, just so you know. I just found out that looking into some information, because there's not a whole lot about Nancy Wilson. Apparently, the last performance that she had was 2011 for Patton College's 125th anniversary. So I was just, I don't know how to feel about that. I know that Nancy is 77, and we were blessed, both T and I, to see her at a college performance several years back, along with Bill Cosby, and she was absolutely wonderful. I sure hope that the Kennedy Center gets it together enough where they honor her with that yearly award that they give to worthy folks. If Nancy Wilson is not worthy, who the heck is? All of those years of giving such joy in her performances and such honesty. Nancy's delivery, and we think about these things, many of us, the more that we hear vocalists, when you hear somebody that sings with that much authenticity, she wants to get to the core of the song. She wants you to feel the song. She's not interested in the vocal acrobatics that she is able to do. She wants to be able to give you something that will be medicine for your soul. That's the difference with the amazing First Lady, Nancy Wilson. Love Won't Let Me Wait. Ow! Charlie Byrd we heard twice. To begin, it was Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd from the amazingly influential Jazz Samba collection from 1962. Eluxo So from Ari Barroza, beautiful work. Keeter Betts is on here actually trading bass off with Charlie's brother, who was known back then as Gene Byrd, but was actually Joe Byrd. Both of them gone. The only person left from this collection of superior musicianships, which was recorded at All Souls Unitarian Church in D.C., is, Buddy Deppenschmidt from Philadelphia on drums, born in 1936. He's the only one left. Bill Reichenbach also on this beautiful work. My God. Verano, as you know, did an anniversary tribute back in 2012, marking the occasion of their anniversary, and they went to All Souls Unitarian Church so that they could do the Jazz Samba project. It was really nice to be able to talk to Lynn and to Ken and the guys and figure out how much that they, among many other artists, were so inspired by that work back in the 60s. Charlie Byrd was in the middle of that set as well from his The Bossa Nova years on clarinet, Ken Peplowski, who is just 55, a youngin' in comparison. How insensitive or insensatis. It's also on The Colors of Latin Jazz. And just reading a little bit about Charlie Byrd this morning, just to acclimate myself back into the rhythm of doing the show. He was raised in a little town called Chuckatuck, Virginia, which a whole lot of folks aren't familiar with. I sure am not, but Charlie spent a whole lot of time in Maryland and used to hold court in the Annapolis area. We really do miss him, man. Woof, such a treasure on guitar. And when he was back and forth with Ken on clarinet, Charlie on guitar, and that chemistry that they had, it was just magic. And by the way, the Colors of Latin Jazz, there was a six CD series. This particular one that starred Charlie and a few others of note was the first one in the series. We've got our friend Norman Woods standing by for next hour. He's looking forward to talking about his new project and other kinds of endeavors he's got going on. It's just going to be something else to talk about what he does, because Norman is not one of those folks that has idle chatter on Hybrid Jazz. He always gets to the meat and potatoes of what's going on in the world, and I'm sure we're going to get very topical, so stand by for that, okay? Gonna just elevate the energy just a tad. Happy birthday tomorrow to our friend Sean Michael Ray, who has been on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Something really wonderful, and actually all of the CD called Overdue is. This is called Black Mamba. Check it out. It's going to kind of raise your temperature a little bit here.
jam on, jam on.
One of the most creative projects, seriously, that has come out this year. Honest to gosh. Winslow Dynasty. Dante Winslow. Trumpeter extraordinaire. Producer, rapper, creative genius. Can't say enough about Dante Winslow. I don't often get my mind blown when someone is being interviewed on this show because you just get so used to content. You get so used to surprises. When Dante Winslow was on the show several months ago now, I had to put the phone down after the show. I had to cry and get myself together because he let it out. If you have never heard about someone's childhood and how music has powerfully influenced them to rise up, he probably is my most definitive example. From this moment forward, honestly, what this young man was able to do in the way of getting out of the depths of despair, horrible childhood abuse, the worst. Horrible poverty, abandonment. It's just amazing. And then he told the story that I just saw in the past 24 hours. If you go to his page on Facebook, he freely acknowledges all of the stuff that has happened to him along the way. And, you know, you might not be able to do that if you didn't become triumphant on the other side. But he was talking about being in Los Angeles and Mashika, his wife, who you heard on those amazing vocals on Chrysalis from Enter the Dynasty, the name of the CD. Here was Dante. He hadn't had his foot in the door yet. He was parking cars at a Los Angeles hotel. And here was Cindy Crawford, who came along, who gave him a wonderful tip. Mashika was pregnant. She was in the car watching Dante park all these cars for these Hollywood types. And Dante said that he was grateful to Cindy for giving him that tip. He said, be careful what is around you and bless people when you can because you just don't know who you're going to bless. So you might as well be in the constant state of blessing people. He's just a trip, I'm telling you. And proof is in the pudding. He's with Justin Timberlake now, but all of these people that he has worked with love him. Roy Hargrove, Kirk Whalum, Questlove, Chick Corea, they're all on this CD. You talk about somebody who has really put the move in the groove with other folks and has spun their heads. This CD is full of gospel and jazz, R&B and funk and fusion. It's just delightful. Yeah, Chrysalis. Gino Goss, we heard. That middle track there, Shake Your Boom Boom. New, also a trumpet and flugelhornist. Gino has been on the show with Gary Fuston, remember, some months back. Gary Fuston of GHP Radio fame, yes indeed. Gino's got this new single, and if you don't know, he is an Indie Music Channel Award winner a few times over. He made his debut in 2009 with Almost Famous. You can hear some tracks still all over the world. This one, he implements this world atmosphere into what he does. He makes it a collective process. So proud to be an independent artist, and he doesn't necessarily know as of yet that I played this track because I don't know what Gino thinks that I do here at Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, but there is certainly a mix of independent and those signed to labels, folks who are local and regional and internationally known and unknowns and knowns. So, Gino, if you're listening, it was really cool to play that track. Woo! Shawn Michael Ray on bass. He is a beast, isn't he? From Overdue from 2013. Man, another one of those hybrid situations where you're bound to find everything. Kelvin Wooten and Hart Ramsey had a hand in production here. Shawn Michael was just playing with Najee a few nights ago, and apparently he killed it, back in Alabama, his home turf. He's in Atlanta, Georgia right now, has worked with Maxwell and Sheila E. and Gerald Albright. Just amazing. His birthday is tomorrow, and the song that you heard was Black Mambo. So sexy. So is he. Don't tell him I said that, though. Please. Could get in trouble. We've got Norman Woods coming up, and we've got Matt and Beach and some guests floating back and forth in the chat room. Auntie G, our Griselda Medina, called from Texas to say that she couldn't get online. I don't know what the situation is, so Beach said maybe it's weather-related. Apparently, that's a problem for you folks in Texas. The weather is so severe sometimes that it just nukes any attempt that you have to get online. That's a bummer. Tell your governor to fix... Oh, wait a minute. He's in enough trouble. Never not mind. Oh, my. Yeah. That needs fixing, doesn't it? Yeah, more ways than one. Look, it's Shawn Michael Ray's birthday tomorrow, but today's birthday is shared by a multitude of friends that we love so well. Among them, Nicole Leone and Mike Pope. Right now, another birthday. And I know that there are going to be several people thrilled that I play a track from Luis Munoz. From Costa Rica to Santa Barbara, he has been able to put all of that special energy. Oh, my God, it's bliss. This is from Invisible, though he has a newer CD that's called Luz, which is light. He is working on a project that involves one kind of formation. He actually has a trio and a quartet. He's got one CD in the works. He's working on yet another that will present all female vocalists. He's just a visionary. This is one of my favorite tracks he ever has done, and many people say the same. From 2010's Invisible, this is Adam's Dream to honor his son on Hybrid Jazz.
step on board, all eyes meet me at the door. Sometimes I'm not sure if it's welcome or caution. I breathe easy, not loud, my fair share of the air, while the ill-mannered forget that truth can be seen through an improper stare. I warn you, I'm curious about your business. Sometimes I want to turn feeling justified to react, but instead I'll take the high road, skilled with the art of traveling black. Each morning I witness gaping chasms between should or shouldn't I impressions. Look at my smile. Is that seat taken? No response. Silent scrutiny. Just to get a seat. A commuter convict on trial. Innocence is my plea. But why do I have to wait for Mr. Laptop's approval before he moves his coat? Not very fair. Don't you agree? Let it be bus, ferry, subway, railroad, first class on an airplane. Matters none, head still turned, shock screaming eyes bold with an intolerant strain. My presence requires minute-to-minute rounds of fresh negotiations for wherever I go. He must be an entertainer, an actor, or a comedian. One of the reasons for this slow move toward equality comes from minimizing the emotional pain that is required to start the process of atoning for wrongful behaviors that stem from wrong perceptions. Prolonged denials, conscious and unconscious, expand throughout the atmosphere and create a repetitive friction. While hidden in statements designed to protect what some say are ethical norms rooted in our culture, but not mine. One where I have to get used to observation first, whenever I go places, near or far. Or what the stares of assessment judge my appearance to say, or what the shortcomings in my behavior is said to lack. Sad days will drown me in self-pity if I'm not able to surpass certain levels of stockpiled ignorance. A skill needed, vital. Is this a part of the art of traveling glass?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, my gosh. You know, the interesting thing about my friend Norman Woods is that when he decides to create a particular poetic piece and has such insight into the way that he is feeling at the time he is writing it, he has no idea. Maybe he does because he's that good. Maybe he knows that when he's writing the piece for the current moment in time, it's going to actually mean more in the days to come in a way that is blindingly realistic and kind of terrifying. right there is The Art of Traveling Black. Now, Norman's in the chat room as well as holding on the phone, and I said to him, you talk about a timely song. This really is. You pick a headline, ladies and gentlemen, in the news, and you know. This wonderful man that I have known now for a few years, oh, what a blessing it is to know him. Jazz poet, but more than that. Screenwriter, music publisher, conscience of current day America. All of that. And so cute, too. So damn cute. Please make welcome inside the healer, also known as Norman Woods. Hey, Norman.
Hey, Trish.
That's boy, all we can you, do, right?
Boy, do you set up an entrance.
Look, there's so much more that I could say. I would be able to go on for at least another minute or so, but once we start to talk, time flies anyway, so I want to get right into the meat and potatoes of things.
Okay. I'm sitting
you
down
know.
And ready.
I know you are. So, look, did you think that you were that much of a visionary where you would write The Art of Traveling Black and then, you know, here we are being all aware. Some folks don't want to be aware, but we absolutely have to be aware of what it means to know how to travel black in America these days.
Well, you know, it was from collective life experiences by which I always got used to being stared at, looked at, or observed or judged, not just stemming from racism or any other forms of discomfort, but just that whole something must be wrong, I need to be prepared, look at him kind of vibe, and you kind of unconsciously develop a sense of defensiveness. And I know, like, in my neighborhood, in most urban cities, I know in my neighborhood we had these little grocery stores where the guy would always watch you to make sure you weren't going to grab candy and run out, all the way until living in suburban Marin County where people aren't used to seeing a certain style or persona or preconceived character. That particular piece, I wrote that piece from an experience I had catching the ferry from San Francisco to Larkspur, and I had this hat that has a tassel on it. And so
yes.
This woman was staring at me, and she just kept smiling and staring at me and smiling. And so I started getting a little nervous. So right when the ferry pulled in to Larkspur, she said, I just wanted to tell you that's a very nice hat, and I just didn't know if it had religious significance or anything, so I didn't want to be offensive. She said all of this, and so I said to her, I said, I'm really sorry. And she said, why are you sorry? I said, I'm sorry that it took so much effort for you to feel okay with just saying nice hat. Because she just was like staring. And so I thought to myself, how many other times do people make these preconceived judgments without any basis of social interaction at all? Rather, you're on a bus or somebody's got their laptop and their coat on there and you look at them like, may I have the permission to sit there? I paid to get on this bus. Or rather, you're in the first class on an airplane. Do I have to be a celebrity? There's just so much inaccurate information from that distant, you know, perspective without social engagement. Because you and I both know a lot of times the image of a person's character changes when you get into a conversation with them.
Yes, and you know what, Norman, feeding on that particular eloquence that you've just stated, you know, I really hadn't thought about it until you said this, and here we are at the beginning of this conversation. But since the last time that you were on the show, I really do think, in particular reference to what you've just said, I think that everybody is in this state, everybody, of fear. This fear has come from all sorts of directions, and it has rendered us unable to speak spontaneously. Isn't that sad?
It's very sad. It's sad because at first I got angry about it, and then after I got through the anger, I got introduced to the fear behind it. And you're right. It has us in, this fear has us in such a non-communicative state of paralysis to not have to fake smile. She went through all that effort just to say, nice hat. And I felt for her because she, it took her 5 or 6 sentences to feel justified with complimenting me. So those are the layers of her misperception that she had to struggle to say, that's a really nice hat, you know? And I'm like, wow. Now I'm thinking on a major scale, how many other people are have settled into some form of misconception that's not allowing them to grow and expand their socializing, which would breed a solution? Because the solution can't be, you know, teachers are born through dialogue. And if we are not engaged in some type of social interaction where there's an exchange of information, it would be very hard for us to give birth to a solution, in my experience.
Well, I completely agree with that. I'm just feeling, you know, the vibe of the time, and this particular vibe in August of 2014 in the United States, or the semi-United States of America, it is one of apprehension and looking over your shoulder. Here's the thing. If I had been that woman, I might have done the same thing. But coming from my point of view, I would be watching you in utter fascination and wanting to weigh my words carefully because I don't wish to offend you. And maybe she felt the same way.
And I think she did.
Yeah. It's not that we are, and I'm putting, for example, white women in a category here.
Uh-huh.
Not that we are scared. I know I can speak for me, and I think I'm a little different than the average bear, but
sorry.
Was
you
that
are.
So flipping funny?
That's an understatement. You are definitely not the average. Okay,
well,
come on.
You know, first of all, I would be thinking, God, he's so hot. That's number one. Number two, I can't let the fact that I find him so handsome affect what I want to ask him. Because I don't know anything about him. There are some black men I know that take it very sensitively when they are approached by a woman who is not a woman of color because they suspect motives immediately. I understand this. I really do. So all of this is going through my head, and, you know, I'm thinking of all the people I've known in my life, and this is just so funny. And, Norman, you understand this. All the people that we know of varying hues who will say, oh, he's my best friend. I didn't even know he was black.
Right.
Or somebody who would say, you know, a black man, for example, oh, I don't even think about the fact that he's white. He's just my friend. And that sounds wonderful, but we all know differently. We
right.
all know the truth.
Well, I think I think knowing that she was not of ill intent allowed me to feel the compassion for her struggle to compliment me, because I didn't feel any negativity. I felt the desire to say something nice and her being challenged by that. So that's what made me say, I feel really bad that you had to go through that. And I wasn't being sarcastic. I was the compassion, her effort, knowing that it was not of ill intent, allowed me to opportunity to express compassion for her struggle to compliment me. So she will leave that. She left that fairy being able to say, how many other layers of challenge in communicating things might I be challenged with? Hopefully she might have got something positive like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely think so, because you have this demeanor about you that disarms people. You have a gentleness of spirit despite the fact that the strength of your words are so powerful. I mean, there's a line in The Art of Traveling Black talking about a chasm and which side of the chasm to walk on a particular day. Oh my gosh, you know, that's so crazy to contemplate that. And of course, my immediate mind goes to Ferguson, Missouri, and thinking about all of the truth that we must face in this society about one end of the spectrum and another, and how perception is and what we've got to do to change.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, I'm doing my part. I'm trying to take ownership of my misconceptions, but I'm also trying to be an example of, if you are really concerned with the truth, then shoulder the responsibility that it takes to pursue it and find it. And once you get it, you share it. That's the name of the game. That's what I can do. You know, that's what I can do. And as I've told you before, I'm probably not going to never sell 100,000 records. I'm probably not going to become this word that I'm really baffled by. I'm not going to become a brand. You know, but I will be able to stand with integrity, knowing that in my best effort, I try to create something that constitutes movement toward a solution, whether it be verbal or whether it be spiritual or emotional. I know that you can always find a way to make a contribution if you choose to commit yourself to doing so.
I love what it says at journeyfromtheinsidemovie.com. And if anybody has not seen that beautiful work, you must go. But one of the wondrous statements from that particular website is that you play for causes that are committed to making hope reachable. I love that, Norman.
That's right. A Philadelphia radio station of Spotlight on Jazz and Poetry, the host called me a harvester of hope, and that's my moniker, harvester of hope.
I
like that.
It took a Philadelphia person to say that because, you know, I'm a little prejudiced, of course, but...
How did I know that was coming?
Who was this that called you the harvester of hope? I love that. I have to thank that person.
Her name is Donna Kirvin. She's a really good friend of mine and a fellow poet. Her poetic name is Celestial Dancer, and she's an excellent poet and a very warm soul. She's one of the only poets that I read her work. I'll go to a poetry reading. I mean, there's a lot of great poets out there, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'm an in-the-trench, grassroots kind of guy, so I'll read her poetry. There's another poet in New York that I read. There's just a couple of poets that have trusted me enough to share their most intimate, you know, form of communication and conveyance. And in honor of that, being that I try to do the same thing, I read their work at poetry readings sometimes, you know.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. She's a good
That's
poet.
An honor.
Poet. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'll have to look her up. Is she a friend of yours on Facebook?
Yes, she is.
Okay, good. Well,
yeah.
back to you, back to the healing work of Inside. Living in the Poetry Hotel, it's interesting because we've had this communication on email, and the last communication that we had, you sent me a couple of tracks, the last one or the first one in this interview that we heard that you thought were of better quality. So when one purchases Living in the Poetry Hotel, it's all good quality anyway, but you are so fastidious about making sure everything sounds wonderful.
And most artists are, you know, and that's sometimes that's the challenge. The challenge is to say, what I have this term I use called conscious/unconscious motivation, and sometimes with artists, we're unconscious of the driving force of perfection that we're in pursuit of because sometimes it's unrealistic. Sometimes people are not really paying attention. In most cases, people are not really paying attention to the things that you think they're paying attention to. Because once they get something that touches their soul, they eliminate any thoughts of judgment or criticism and all that, and they make themselves open to have an experience. But see, we don't really know that, and that's what came into me doing this CD. I took a 2.5 week period to make amends to my poetry, because I had been writing stuff and performing it and saying, oh, I got to have something new. People don't want to hear that one. And I started going into this whole commercial, I know what's best for people, commercial, new poem every week vibe. And I forgot that the role that my work has for me deserves much more than that. So I spent 2.5 weeks apologizing to my own poetry, because I said, you were here for me under the most unforeseen circumstances. You helped me sustain sanity. You helped me work my way through process. And I spent 2.5 weeks, and I said, so the next album I do, I'm going to concentrate on you, and I'm going to minimize the instrumentation. And that's when Poetry Hotel came about. Because what I realized is, what I realized in this process is that my art is not my own. See, all that stuff I was trying to do to get it on the iTunes chart and be recognized and do all that stuff, it has nothing to do with that. What it has to do with is being endowed a gift or a petition of grace to touch people's souls. And if you're going to do that, then the highest level of divinity and integrity of your art must be conveyed. So that doesn't mean iTunes chart. That doesn't mean 100,000 sales. That doesn't mean get on a variety show and be a spoken word artist or whatever. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't say that in bad taste for those who fit in the brand mold. But I was in the business before I was an artist. So I understand how easily one can compromise their artistic integrity to fit into a mold. Well, I'm not down with the mold.
That's not
my move. That's not my move, you know.
Yep. And
so jazz,
you,
that's why I do jazz. Jazz is free enough, and the heritage of artistic integrity, I'm honored that I can connect to it, and it can be the landscape of my words.
Earlier in the show, just because you were going to be on the show, and I wanted to have a mirror image of two sides of a coin, I played something by Dante Winslow and Winslow Dynasty. And Norman, if you're not familiar with him, once you know his story, you'll want to be more familiar with him. It makes little difference, although the contrast is unbelievable, that he's now working with Justin Timberlake. What matters is that Dante came up out of the depths of despair, poverty, and extreme sexual abuse and abandonment to foster an environment of success for himself. He refused to believe that his life was going to be a failure. So when you hear him do his particular raps, you understand the authenticity. It's so real, it almost cuts you. He's got this really wonderful kind of hybrid album out called Enter the Dynasty, and he's got his wife Mashika doing vocals, and a lot of people who are believers are on this CD with him. But you and he, if you met, would become such kindred souls. I just got so excited about thinking this today, and it just came to me how much you would be able to share if you were having a cup of coffee together or if you had some time together. He would view you as kin.
I'm gonna reach out to him. I heard you talking about him, and I kind of semi-felt the same thing. So I'm going to make an attempt to reach out to him. I will do that. I will do that. Hopefully there won't be any buffers or whatever, but we'll let the spirit decide that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You know what? That would be very surprising, because here's why. He is like you with his tender heart. He goes out into the community wherever he is, and he makes sure that kids are being talked to. He makes sure. Yeah. So, he would view that as something that was sent by God. You.
Good. I'm going to do it. I'm going to let you know. I'm going to let you know what happened.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Because I could use the support of a fellow, you know, spirit warriors, I could use that because, you know, it gets very challenging carrying an ideal or a sense of hope. I mean, hope is beautiful as it is. It can be very challenging to maintain if you don't have support of some sort.
You know, you are so right about that because do you find that with your inner circle or circle of people that you consider to be close, does conversation flow? Do people, friends, understand where you're coming from? Do you often get viewed even by those you are sure who love you? Do you get looked at as though you are made out of green cheese sometimes?
Well, I don't know about the green cheese because I got cool people in my circle like you.
Oh,
and
that's
others.
Awesome.
I got cool people. I mean, the live show that The Art of Traveling Black, I have 3 albums out now, God bless. I did a CD release for Liberty and Poetry Hotel in Berkeley, California, where I'm from, Berkeley, Oakland.
Yeah.
100 people between the two shows showed up. It was a full house. It was a small community theater. It was the first time I had performed in my hometown. Now, I've performed in Canada, London. I've performed in San Francisco, every place but home because, you know, home just has that effect where you overthink what it's supposed to be about or what people expect and so forth. The comments I got on Facebook was, Berkeley loves you, Norman. We can't wait. I had a room full of people that I've known 40 years or more since I was 7 years old.
Oh.
I had guys that was broke down, who didn't have a dime to their name, and scrunched up $12 to see me. And I said, I will give you – excuse me, I get a little choked up about it.
Oh.
I told a friend of mine, I said, I'll give you that $12 after the show. Don't worry about it. After the show, I tried to give this gentleman his $12 back, and he said, Norman, I don't need the $12, man. You've always been a caring and giving guy as long as I've known you. I'm cool, man. I'm looking at a guy that I know don't got a pot to in, and he still believed that I was a caring and giving guy who passed anything I knew that could be of value to someone out of myself. Now, that's a welcome home.
Oh,
now, imagine 45 people who feel that way about you.
Oh, gosh. That's
2 shows.
That's miraculous, really.
I haven't even processed it yet. That's why I said my art is not my own, and I am more of a humble student now to the significance or insignificant, depends on who's viewing it, of my work. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do, but I did the CD release. It was a beautiful experience, and it made me really reexamine my relationships with people.
Mm.
And my art is not my own, so I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know if I'm supposed to do another type of promotion for the album, but I have 3 albums. I have Living in the Poetry Hotel, then I have Inside Live at Monkey House, which was the CD release, which you just played from, and then I did a tribute album called Mystic Dance from a short film I did, which was paying homage to my old keyboard player, Cy Perkoff. So I have 3 albums. How many artists can say in 2 years they have a movie and 3 albums and don't know what they're supposed to do with it? I have no idea, because I'm not going the brand route, Trish. I'm not really trying to hustle and kiss somebody's butt like they got to see what I got. The people who love me and the people who I am committed to be of service to have already acknowledged that. It would be a very hard case for somebody to penetrate the experience of having 50 people in a room twice who's known me for 40 years who still believe I have the ability to come into their soul, and they feel good about it. That's a hard act to follow for any businessman's twisty terminology or offer. That's a hard act to follow, so you got to come correct now because I'm a believer.
Well, you know, here's the thing about you, Norman. I don't know if you have any assistance or not, but you so need someone to make sure that everything gets done, because you do have this amazing gift, and you need to focus on the gift. And sometimes the wear and tear of the business side of it can get in the way so much that it wearies your spirit. So,
Without a doubt.
So
I'm thinking that maybe it will probably take one influential figure, somebody who has not influence, meaning, you know, branding-wise, but just somebody who has a nice, rich conveyance of character that people like to see. I don't know if it would be a musician, an actor. I don't know who it would be, but just somebody that you always like to see and hear talk. I don't know if somebody like that, say, endorses me or whatever. In this business, momentum can change like that. And I know that
because I have
20-something years in the business part prior to the 14 as an artist. But I go in and out as an artist. See, I'll stop and go, I can't conform to this. This is silly. This is a pipe dream. And then I'll stop, like, you know, that I hadn't done nothing for a while. And then what people fail to realize is that if you've been given a divine gift and a divine assignment, you're going to get the calling. And the calling is going to knock on your door when you think the calling's not in you. There's going to be another knock at the door, something that says, look, okay, your rest period is over. Your reflection period is over. All the rainbows and unicorn talk you're doing is over. It's time to get back to doing what you're supposed to do. So it happens. So I give up. The art is not my own. I am just a servant, and I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. When the calling comes, it's not going to have to call me twice. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it looks like record sales. I don't know if it looks like soundtracks. I don't know. It might be meeting people like Dante. That might be the reward, and I'm open to that.
It might be meeting
people like that, just to let them know that there are others out there doing what they're doing, and they're not alone, because in the end scheme of things, we need to let the hopeless know that they're not alone, and somebody is out there always reaching for them or lowering the bar if it is without reach.
And that's the way I'm going from
here on out.
Well, you know, your heart always remains the same. It's just that you go through changes and you reassess where the journey is going to take you. But your heart is so monumentally large, even though there have been times in your life where it could have gone another direction. And you asked me in one of the correspondences that we had to listen to everything, and of course I did. And I have to listen to your work so that there are no other distractions around me. I could never have something from this artist known as Inside the Healer with anything other than a front burner focus. So with that, I want to be able to play something by you now. And here's what I have. I have Problem or Solution, and I have Grace Training. And I know that you ended your Living in the Poetry Hotel with a particular piece, and I want to end the show with that because you never put anything in a random set. You never do that.
You picked the best ones, too. The ones that you picked are awesome. I was hoping you'd pick those. Those are
really
awesome because Problem or Solution lets everybody know that they can always contribute something to the solution, you know, and it's not like you have to jump in front of a bullet. You can make a phone call. You can hug somebody. You can always contribute something to the solution. But if you're broken, if the bridge is broken and you don't feel that, then it's going to be very hard. So everybody can decide, what does being a part of the problem or what does being a part of the solution look like to them? And Grace Training is off of the new album, Mystic Dance, which I haven't figured out when I'm going to release it. That had to do with me sitting up here with a torn Achilles 6 months, not being able to go anywhere and thinking I was handicapped. And I had to change that. I had to say, well, instead of feeling handicapped, why don't you think about what is within the realm of capability, which is the whole theme of what we're talking about. And I had to say to myself, you can email people and say, thank you for that conversation. You can call somebody and say, how's your life working? You can do a lot of things standing still, which I did with a cast on. And the things I tapped into, I said, what am I going to call this experience? I said, you're exemplifying your grace training. And I said, the light went on. I said, grace training, because any time you tap into that compassion and that thought of someone outside of yourself without strain or pain, it just naturally comes from your heart, those are reflections of grace. And I am quite aware that I have been very well grace trained. And so that's why I wrote that poem, to say, you just changed the negative narrative from feeling hurt, handicapped, and limited to full, enlightened, and capable of reaching from standing still, reaching out. And you have grace training. I have grace training. You are creative. We learn how to teach people how to treat us by what we allow. And we will not let people make us become non-caring. We will not let people make us think we don't care. That's what I said. You teach people how to treat you by what you allow, and that changes their perspective of you. And so grace training is really special to me.
Well, then, we shall play it.
Right.
I'm thinking of the unicorns, and you are absolutely my standard bearer for all things unicorn-like. This is Norman Woods, my good friend, and who you know him by when you will buy his work is Inside the Healer, Grace Training on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
These words are not my own. They were assigned to me. The reward for over-excessive will has become blind to me. Sitting in the midst of powerlessness, without appetite for result or conclusion, embraced by a passionate neutrality. The notorious try to sway me into reaction, but instead, I am lifted by enlightened wings of subconsciousness. And the next move is not a mystery. A refusal to be baited by power plays that infuse a desire for triumph over the weak is necessary for me to continue walking with integrity, even if the reward is not so easily apparent. My head still searches for nurturing, so deeply camouflaged within a fear-generated momentum to chase rainbows and unicorns. While the right-wrong patrol is in hot pursuit, trying to recruit me, and the Got Your Number committee is still in session, creating push-pull and take addendums, which are not governed by love. For with the hurt, we lean into their pain. Yes, I am and shall remain a lender of benefit without expectation of return. As harvesters of hope, the job is to express the will to heal them, not kill them. This heart lies in a knowing that sitting still is a tool, an action that will help me sustain compassion, keeping liberation within reach for all involved or watching. Because the best example of freedom is when it's used to set others free. Hesitant to confess becomes less, flexible from our adamant version to conversion, and the choices of idealistic reflections being provided by the many forms of God are not hard anymore. For these words are not my own, they were assigned to me. The reward for over-excessive will has become blind to me. As we process any challenge before us, progress can be measured by our lack of need for deep comprehension. The greater good shows no favoritism. Everyone has a chance to elevate. Because our duty is clear, as harvesters of hope, we try to heal them, not kill them.
Again, Norman, your words have even greater impact on this particular day, the day that we're talking to you, August the 19th, 2014, than what you originally thought or conceived. It's just amazing that now we need these words desperately, honestly.
Well, I'm hoping I'm going to try different methods of promotion. I'm going to write bloggers. I'm going to do introduction letters. I'm going to do all these things. And like I said, don't get me wrong. I'm practical and I am business minded, and I know how to do what I'm supposed to do. So I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to hide behind some airy fairy ideal of my mystical words will fly on their own. No, I mean, God don't feed you through a keyhole. You know, you got to open the door. He'll give you a sandwich, but he won't squeeze it through a keyhole. So sometimes you got to open the door, you know. So I understand that. Hot dogs and sandwiches don't fit through keyholes. So you got to open up the door. So
You know what? That is going to last with me all flipping week. God don't give you no sandwich through a keyhole.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, so I mean, I'm going to do the work. I'm going to write bloggers. I'm going to send CDs out. I'm going to do all that stuff, you know, because that's just the realities of the deal. But I'm not going to, like I said, the artistic integrity of what I'm doing is not going to be compromised, and it's non-negotiable. You know, I'm not going to have somebody have me doing backflips and bebopping and all of that stuff just to make my stuff. The first person that says to me, well, we need to make your brand, I'm going to say, wrong person. The first person that says brand to me, I'm going to say, I don't think you're the right person, because that's not the terminology. Don't come at me, because like I studied marketing management in college. I mean, I've had three businesses. I mean, I know all the business hoo-ha, the legal hoo-ha, but the minute you subject yourself to that criteria, then you have to adhere to the rules that govern that, and that's not necessary. It's not necessary. I'm practical. I'm reasonable. But the most important thing is that my words reach those who they're supposed to. And I don't mean that idealistically. I mean that realistically. That's the most important thing to me. That's why when I do concerts, I rent the place. I don't do the let me hang out at the bar and talk cool with the club owner so he'll let me play here. I just say, look, man, how much do it take to get your spot here, to use your spot? If it's too much, I say, I can't do that. And if they say, how much? I say, this is what I could do. Done deal. Got my staff, got my videographer, got my money collectors. That's it. That's what we're going to do. Let's. You want to make some money, here's the money. I need to do what I'm supposed to do, and this is the venue that I'm going to do it in. Done deal. You know, it's all about respect. It really is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I like that tune a lot. I like that a lot. Cy Perkoff has been with me for 10 years or more, and he is the only musician that played with the Tribe that has always been there for me without BS. He's always been there for me. And he'll always say when we do a show, I'll say, how do you think that sound? And he'll say, how did you think that sound? It's about you. He'll always say that. And I'll go, this guy is a genius. This guy is a genius who loves Thelonious Monk, and he's a genius, and he is humbling himself to give me his talents So I did this album and said, dedicated to and featuring a poetic tribute to and of Cy Perkoff. And so that piece is off of there. It's just me and him on the piano. And since Poetry Hotel went a different direction with another fine keyboard player, Keith Saunders, and a young bassist, Ollie Dudek, which you'll hear if you get those other tracks in there, if I stop running my mouth, but, you know, they're fine musicians. And like I said, everyone has a chance to elevate, you know. And so new direction.
I love that line. Everyone has a chance to elevate. Oh, my God. You talk about a hopeful idea there, because you realize how many people that are in this country, let alone other countries, but we're living in this country. Do you realize how many people wake up feeling hopeless each day?
I do, and I'm reaching for them. I'm coming for them. I'm letting it be known. I'm coming for them. I'm coming for them. I'm coming for them. Me and Dante, we're coming for them. We're out there. We're coming for them.
Oh,
you
my
know?
God, he would love that. He would just love that. We're coming for him. Yeah.
You pass it to him if you get to him before I do, but we're coming for him. We're coming for him. So that live show, you know, was really I have to meditate like 2 days just to kind of say, yes, this is me. Yes, you've been chosen. And I just humbly say to you, Tris, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with these albums yet.
Well, that's okay. I mean,
how
are you supposed to know all the answers? See, that's what gets us in trouble when we contemplate people who perceive that because you have a strong talent in one direction, and this is what goes wrong in companies all across the United States, because you have a talent in a strong direction in one particular endeavor, they have you do other things that you're not qualified to do and don't have the gift for doing.
Right.
So the thing is, it just overwhelms us. And our gift gets lost in the shuffle. And this is why I say to you, Norman, you know what? It has to be an organic process with you. You will
Without
find those folks who know how to go into different arenas or avenues for you to get your words across. You can't possibly do it all. It's too much.
That's right. Well, my friend in London, I have a listenership in London, and my friend Sammy Goldburn in Birmingham, he says, one thing you do, and I hope you continue to do, is keep it honest. And that's what I do, because my work, not only does it hopefully do stuff for other people, but it's there for me when I become misaligned, when I fall off the beam.
Mm.
I'm fortunate to have a chronicle of what being on the beam or being in the middle lane looks like for me. I have a definition of my style of poetry. I call it soul dialogue. So I have an idea of ways and how I've become teachable and what I've learned. It's like a verbal diary. So when I listen to my pieces, sometimes I go, dude, where was you at when you wrote that, man? You and God must have been just hanging out at the park or something, because he's just like, And so it sometimes it's like that for me. And sometimes I'll get an email where somebody quotes a line out of my piece, and I'll go, wow, you just don't know what, like I say, there's a thing I say in about being broken. And I have a film that I just completed called Heartbeat, The Spirit of Soul Redemption, and it talks about writing your way through from out of depression. And one of the things I say in there is that I am a man who has been thoroughly broken, but I have found the value in each broken piece. So you don't have to have it together. You don't have to have it together to be of value. A piece, yet it be a broken piece or a misplaced piece, can still have value long as you maintain value in the perspective. So I may be broken, but I also know that my pieces represent value. Because people don't always get everything you say anyway. So when somebody quotes a line out of my poem, my soul dances. My soul dances. That's the soundtrack of my soul. And it's like they're in my orchestra. They're in my poem. They've said this line. So they become a part of the life force energy that that poem has created. So anybody that listens to my work, please feel free to share with me a line or a verse that has meaning to you. And, you know, let's keep the life force energy of hopefulness alive. And that's how we do it. Teachers are born through dialogue.
You know, there's just so much to say in response to what you said, but I'm supposed to tell you a little story about Charlie Pride, because this is going back years ago to when I was involved in country music radio.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to be very concerned with, and I know you're one of the more sensitive beings on the planet, and that's because of the experience, your particular hard-endured experience has absolutely mandated that you become sensitive to everybody. So I'm hearing you say in a multitude of ways that you want to retain your authenticity and you don't want to be put into a corner by someone who perceives of you as possibly a money-making machine or a brand or a clone or somebody to make business matters echo into something that you never wanted a part of. Charlie Pride, back in the 70s, was one of those individuals that was very unique in country music because he was an African-American man singing country. Nobody knew that he was black. Very early on, people smelled profit from him, and he made it clear. He said, what I want to do is I want to appeal to working class folks who need that shred of hope in their lives that ordinarily wouldn't come to them. I'm speaking to a whole lot of people, black and white and different kinds of colors. I want people to understand that I'm a guy who has a family and who takes joy in the little things in life, and you are not going to make me anything more than what I am.
Mm.
So it was really something that Kiss an Angel Good Morning, which was huge for Charlie Pride. It depicted a dad who was in love with his wife and in love with his kids, and he lived for those Saturday mornings when the kids were watching TV and he would have breakfast with his wife, a simple situation in life that he would turn to again and again, and he never allowed himself to be used by anyone through the years of his career.
Well, that's why I said to you, you teach people how to treat you by what you allow.
Yes.
That's where that comes from. And like a lot of these kids that are in the business nowadays, I guess what they're accepting is more than they have, but I know that they can achieve much more. And you don't have to fight the dragon to prove that. You just need to stay committed to your convictions and be negotiable and compromising in the most healthy manner. That's where I'm coming from, because I'm from the business part before the art part. So I have an understanding of what they may be after. You just have to have the confidence in yourself enough to say, no, thanks. I don't think that will work for me. I don't think that will create a channel by which I can express this thing that you seem to have so much admiration for. That's not the best channel by which I can do that. Don't try to convince me of that, because you'll be trying to deceive me. To thine own self is true. Not be true, is true. And you have the power to determine where that is compromised or negotiated or put on the back burner where it belongs and doesn't. Because at the end of the day, when you put that head down on that pillow, you deserve to sleep comfortably. You don't deserve to go to sleep going, oh, man, today's only Wednesday. I got three more days. Well, that's an indication right there that maybe you went beyond the line where you should have. I'm not trying to be hard or nothing. I'm reasonable. But don't see me unreasonably and present to me unreasonable objectives, because you're not pursuing the authentic me. You're pursuing who you think you want me to be, and that you have the control to create that. And that's not happening. And that's not happening. Like I said, I'm too far down the rabbit hole. I've jaded myself. I'm jaded. I'm self-jaded. I'm just like, ain't going to sell 100,000 records. Nobody's going to have me on their variety show. You know, I'll never be on Jimmy Fallon. You know, I'll just be... I'm a coffee house poet. You know, I'm a coffee house poet. I try to share what I learn from other people. I try to recirculate meaningful conversation with meaningful dialogue. And, oh, well, if that's not enough, I ain't got too much. It's kind of like when you love something. If you love something with all your heart, you'll be loved out if it don't work because you put all your stuff into it. So it's like, you know, it's like, what do you expect me to say? If I came to you 100%, you expect me to act like there was 110%? I'm telling you, I gave you all I had.
Yeah, but you know, Norman, the interesting thing about you is, it's beyond interesting, actually, is that part of you is this stone-cold realist, but the other part of you is brimming over with gratitude for everything that does occur into your life. So you've got this amazing balance, and it's hard-fought, hard-won balance, but you always strive for it.
But that's where people like you and the people in my network, that's why I said the people in my network are so awesome, because you guys are the ones that do that part. I might be the realist, but you guys are the one that says, go on, Norman, give up an extra smile. Go on, you can laugh. You know, you guys help me. That's why you guys are so important. So if we can do that with other people, they will unconsciously unleash their hidden potential, because they will feel safe to laugh. They will be receptive to a hug. They will loosen up a little, even though they may be hard because they think they need to be. I mean, when you laugh, you can't help but laugh with you. I mean, get real about it. You don't even have to know what you said. If you laugh, we just laugh with you. We don't even have to. It's just because you know that whatever was said, whether you understand it or not, it is funny, it's enlightened or whatever, and when you laugh, you just say, I'm just going to join in the laughter. I'll get what it was about later. And that's what we need to be doing. We need to let people know that they're not alone and they can be a part of the solution even if they don't realize it. I'll hold it down on the serious. I'll hold it down on the reality. But I trust those around me that love me. When they say, loosen up, it's cool, let's laugh, I wholeheartedly trust you guys. That's why I said all my Facebook friends, you, Maddie, I mean, you guys are awesome. You know, you guys are like awesome to me. My heart sings and my soul dances. And I mean that from God's mouth to my ears and from my mouth to your heart. I mean that. I got awesome people in my life. I got awesome people in my life. And I think that I would rather have 25 of you than 150 people that I ain't sure of.
Absolutely, yes. And
that's
you,
how my
you
relationships are. That's how my relationships are. So I'm cool. So, you know, we just going to hold it down. And if they bring me into the upper echelon of popularity, you know, I'm still going to keep myself grounded with my folks. You know what I mean?
I do, and here's what we do. You know, I'm talking about Matt Williams and Griselda and Beege and the different people that we know that we interact with so much. We might not have ever met these folks face-to-face. Norman, you and I have never met face-to-face, but it doesn't matter. Here's what we are able to do for one another, and you said it, and this is the important word to use. We really do create these mutually safe places for one another.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, when I see you, it's not going to even be now I see the face behind it. It ain't going to be that. We just going to just go, you hungry? Yeah, I'm hungry. Let's go get some meat. And we just going to just move through it. You know?
Yeah.
That's how it's going to be.
It really is like that. And for us to have found this particular society, this beautiful subculture, it's really, it's astounding. And for as many people that bitch and moan about Facebook or, you know, the ADD or ADHD qualities of Twitter, the fact of the matter is that when you get these beautiful bones thrown at you day after day, it is so satisfying. It's just like, if folks need the validation, if you're not going to get it on these social networks where you have found kindred spirits, I don't know if you're going to find it.
Right. Because it's not the social network. It might be something with the blueprint. It might not be the social network.
It's that damn broken bridge.
That's right. Exactly. You know, so, you know, it's like in a most loving way, we just have to say, check your notes, sweetheart. You just have to tell them, check your notes. Just check your notes to see if there's any information that you might be missing. Because, you know, like you'll see when you hear problem or solution, you'll see.
Well, speaking of which, let's play problem or solution.
That's right.
Because, you know, you're either one or the other, and you might want to check out the other if you are the other.
Check your notes.
We have Norman Woods with us, and again, time is just flying. It's so crazy whenever you're here. You really must pick up on one of the works that he has done through the years. This is, and actually there's a few ways you can find problem or solution, ? But this particular track is the one, Norman, that you suggested. This sounds better. Play this.
The ones on the album sound good, too. There's a studio, but I just wanted you guys to experience what it was like to play in front of people that knew me for 40-something years. It doesn't take anything away from the CD, Living in the Poetry Hotel.
Yes.
It doesn't. It's just I wanted you guys to have as much of a close experience as though you were there, and that's why I was saying that.
Yeah. Well, this is as close to feeling as though you're part of the rapture as you're going to feel. This is Inside the Healer on Hybrid Jazz.
I work downtown, you know, at the construction site over there on 7th Street. They say we're building condos from some folks that who are being relocated from the old neighborhood. This guy was standing near a fence in back of me, silent. He just kept staring at me while I was working hard. I mean, real hard. So hard that I knew by the end of the day that I would have my bicep buff on. Then he blurted out, "Hey man, are they doing any hiring?" I turned to him and said, "Sorry brother, but I don't think so." Head down, he walked away. I walked over to my foreman and asked, "But we build bridges, don't we? Or do we tear them down?" Long day's work is about to come to an end. Walking toward the bus stop, I came to the corner and stopped. The traffic light had turned red. My body felt tight while I wiped some sweat from my head. Not paying too much attention to what was going on around me, I stopped, took a deep breath, and let go of a heavy sigh. And out of nowhere, standing in front of me was a young boy, about 11, no more than 12. staring at me hard, straight in the eye, with a stern look on his face. He looked at me and said, "Get your foot off my ship." Problem or solution? Problem or solution? Problem or solution? Am I? I looked down, and beneath my foot was a brown bag. He picked it up and said, "So, what you need?" As I walked away, there was a sharp pain in my heart. I don't know why, asking myself, but we build bridges, don't we? Or do we tear them down? I decided instead of catching the bus that I would walk home. I was about a block from my house when I saw the police pin his brother up against the wall. They said he fit the description of a man who had just robbed the convenience store down at the corner. Problem or solution? Problem or solution? Problem or solution? Am I? I heard him say, "My ID is in my back pocket. Man, I just came from trying to get a job." I walked past him, head down, while crossing the street. But in my mind, I was still thinking about that child. You know, the one with that hard look on his stern little face. While in my mind, I kept asking myself, but we build bridges, don't we? Or do we tear them down? And that's when it hit me. The brother the police had up against the wall was the same brother from my work site. I turned around and looked back at him from across the street. Our eyes made contact for one final time. Problem or solution? Problem or solution? Am I a part or am I part of what? At that moment, I wanted to believe that we build bridges. But in my heart, I knew that we just let them fall apart.
Man, I just feel high knowing that you probably were at that moment. Whoa, God. It's just, you know, you are such a throwback to what was, as I remember, because I'm older than you, Norman, you know that. I'm going to be 62 in October. So I remember the beatnik folks that were alive and well in the late 50s and early 60s. And it just reminds me of that whole environment and that Mose Allison frame of mind. And then you are propelled into this future where you can do so much good as this anointed spokesperson for all that is divine.
Thank you. That's really awesome. I mean, I must give credit, though. I have to give, first of all, my musicians, Keith Saunders on the piano and Ollie Dudek on bass. I must give credit to The Vibe. That's my new group. This project is called Inside the Vibe, as opposed to Inside the Tribe, which I had my group, my quartet, for 10 years, and Inside the Vibe is Keith Saunders and Ollie Dudek. But I must give a shout-out to Berkeley for that, because being brought up in Berkeley, California, during the free speech movement had a tremendous impact and influence on expressions of ideas and ideals and perspectives. I used to go up to the Berkeley City Hall. I mean, in Berkeley, I grew up where if you felt your dog's rights were violated, you just got a petition with 200 signatures and they put you on the court calendar. And I used to go and I used to sit in court and I used to watch these people speak up for, I don't like the way they treated my dog and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I also came up, you know, around the influence of the Center for Independent Living, which was responsible for cutting slates in the sidewalk for handicapped people, because in Berkeley, people on motorized wheelchairs, you used to see them flying around. They'll run you over on the sidewalk. It was, like, safe. And so I grew up around not so much every ideal I believed in, but I grew up in an environment that said, this is how you express something if you need to say it. This is the manner you do it. I mean, I got shot with a rubber gun, tear gassed at Southgate during the Vietnam protest. I grew up around that. So indirectly, it kind of equipped me to express the value of my own doctrine of character and integrity and whatsoever. So I have to give a shout-out to that. And I'm sure everybody's city has their own contributions. I'm just saying, for the fact of free speech and Cal Berkeley and all of that and that stuff, that I just got influenced by that, as there's a manner by which you can express a need. So that influence that you just were referring to, that's where a lot of that comes from. People's Park, Provo Park, you know, Bill Graham, you know, San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury, all of that stuff. I've been shaped by a lot of that.
Yeah. You know, people don't take stock and really contemplate that, but that really bears mentioning, and I appreciate that you said that. Just the sound quality is so good on this too, Norman. You are right. God, it sounds so good. Shoo!
Yeah, I'm doing the best I can. I haven't mastered it yet. I don't even know what I'm going to do with the album. I just finished the artwork. You know I'm going to send you one. So, but I finished the artwork and everything and just did the stuff, you know. And like I said, I used to listen to Gil Scott-Heron religiously. So, Gil Scott and Sekou Saniata, Kamal Daoud out of L.A., the Watts poet writers from down there, the Watts writers down there, Quincy Troop, and, you know, a lot of those people. But as I said before, it's very important to understand that there are different voices of concern. Some are aggressive, some are political, some are militant, some are whatever. I'm very clear that mine are of the expressions of the soul, and they are more infused by love, compassion, and the pursuit of hope. I know that. It doesn't make me wimp or weak or nothing. It just makes me have clarity of my purpose. That's all. I'm just very clear that if you're going to give me your attention and you're going to welcome me into your heart and your soul and you're going to listen to my stuff two or three times, which most cases you probably should, I'm going to let you know that I deserve that. So I'm not going to be giving you no BS. As you know, I very seldom cuss on any of my stuff, but I said the S word because I couldn't think of no better way than, I think I was in Philly or I was in New York one time, and I saw this little dude, you know, run to the pipe, the drain pipe, and grab the drugs, and the guy, the older guy sitting up in the window, and I said, now, ain't no way in the world you're going to tell me that people are going to stand here and let this 11-year-old boy do this in front of us while this guy is sitting up there in the window. And that bothered me. And so that's when I said the S word, to get your foot off my – I that just came out because, like I said, I don't have to cuss to make a point. But it's just like he was so territorial about what he was doing, and he was doing it for somebody who didn't even care about him. So ain't no way in the world you're going to justify to me that you can turn your cheek and watch an 11-year-old boy get extorted with values that will threaten his life in any day.
Well,
there's no way you can tell me you can just sit and that just happens. That's a child. That's a child. That's an 11-year-old child.
Norman, thank God that you see this, because so many people just have let that jaded part overtake their balance, and they don't care. They look the other way. Do you realize how many people look to you because you're not tired yet? You're not tired. You were depressed at one point. You have worked out of that. You were at one point homeless. You worked yourself out of that. You're not done yet. You're not tired yet. So people look to you. Jeez, here I am almost crying, because that's a big deal.
It is. And like I said, you know, I may not have all the answers, but at least I can articulate it enough for the next group that has energy to at least absorb the essence and the value of what's being said of concern, and they can be the petitioners, they can be the strikers and whatever, they can be that. You have to pass the torch, and someone has to keep the torch lit. Now, I may not be as energized and vocal and political as some, but I know how to water the seed of thought that would give birth to the next one who is to bring concern or the attention to some concern. I can definitely water a seed, and I can plant one. So that's what the elder statesmen do sometimes. Sometimes we only have the energy to pass the seed or to water a seed, but those who receive the seed must take responsibility to help it grow and become fertile in its most effective form. And we don't have no control over that. But there's no way you can tell me, if you see an 11-year-old child participating in drug dealing and you don't think that there's a problem with that, you not doing nothing about that. I may not know what the answer is, but there's no way that you can turn on that for me. I just don't believe in that. You know, and like you said, I've been through a lot of stuff, a lot of horrors and stuff, but I don't use them to proclaim myself as ambassador of Sidewalk City neither. You know, but I do know that I have to go, what's the point? So if sharing with you war stories has a significant role to move my story forward, I will. But if sharing war stories has no significance to move my message or my concern or what I think is relevant forward, then I don't engage in it. You know,
well,
like I said,
you've embraced evolution, and many folks have chosen not to do that. So that is such a monumental going forward, and you're continuous in that road. You have not deviated on that road since the time I've known you. You're always thinking of ways to go forward, and I have this song here. Usually I play three, today four, because I wanted to end, you know, our time together with "An Open Heart Will Grow," because that's you.
That's the perfect one, because that's the one that helped me realize that my art is not my own. And like I said, Trish, who I am and who you know me as to be, that's why I say to you, I may not fit a brand, and what I'm talking about may not be profitable, but there'll be somebody, I'm sure, who wants to find some path to redemption and say, I've been compromising my integrity for so long in this business, I want to do something meaningful before I go out. Let me check out inside. You know, so there'll be somebody, I'm sure there'll be somebody who wants to do something good, and I'll know that they're sincere, and it's okay, because sometimes the road to redemption can be too overwhelming for some cats, but I've seen guys try to come back and do stuff meaningful after they've been chewed up and spit out, and they get up on the award stage and go, I want to thank God, but they wouldn't thank God when they were doing what they were doing. So the road to redemption can be challenging, but they will be met with a compassionate heart by me. I will not say, I want you to do that. Weren't you the one who, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to try to be as supportive as I can, because once again, I am not the sheriff of redemption, and I do not determine the length of time it takes for somebody to wake up. And it might take somebody a long time. If I'm chosen to be there when they do it, I will feel grateful for that. But it can be hard when you see somebody going 10 to 15 years making millions of dollars and, you know, and just smashing people, and then, but when their soul cries out, if you're the one chosen to be there for them, then your challenge will be, can I rise above all that I've seen and endured or saw with that person and realize that I was chosen for the most significant turning point in their lives, what kind of spirit am I moving with? And I'm ready. I'm not a forgiving guy as much as the most saintly are, but I know when I've been chosen to escort somebody to a sense of redemption, and I know how to put stuff aside and try to be there. And if I don't do it well, I'll get better because I'm committed to that. That's divinity in its highest form.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'll tell you this one thing before you play that tring. A guy just told me last week, a poet named Q.R. Hand, he said, when I listen to your work, I feel like I'm here in sacrament without religion. Ain't that something? I'm like, I'm still having that. I had to look up sacrament because, you know, I was raised Catholic, and I got scared when I heard the word sacrament. I got scared because I was raised Catholic, and I'm a Buddhist, and I'm like, I got scared and stuff, and I said, oh, wait a minute, he just means most sacred. I got scared for a minute. But I thought it was a good compliment because I didn't know it was a compliment as much as it was.
Oh, definitely, because religion is man-made. Sacrament
right.
is directly
said,
from God. Yeah.
Right. He said, I'm living in the sacrament without religion.
Woo,
it took me a while,
yes.
but I'm like, I'm going to put that on my album cover. So Open Heart Will Grow, and Open Heart Will Grow is a piece dedicated to people like you and other people who have welcomed me back and always just that has helped me trust that what I get to give is special and an open heart will grow. And I've trusted certain people and opened my heart, so that's what the poem's about. So I'm going to shut up now before I get emotional.
No, too late for me. I love you to my core and always will and believe in what you're doing. And you and Dante are supposed to get together, and there's going to be more situations coming up that you're going to share on Facebook that are going to blow even your mind. So be surprised by nothing in the way of goodness coming to you.
Can people hear this broadcast? Can they go to Blog Radio and listen to this later? Can people do that?
Absolutely. Oh, it will go into archive mode almost immediately after 4 o'clock Eastern time. Yes.
All right, darling. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Norman. God bless you. Love you truly.
All right. Bless you, my dear one.
Bye-bye. Norman Woods, Inside the Healer. This is An Open Heart Will Grow.
Hesitantly, he speaks of an experience premature before truth have arrived. From his scars interrupted, his wounds never came. How could he have known that the last stages of healing were soon to follow? Entrenched within the identity of comforting motions to withdraw, granting success for unconscious demands to isolate, the challenge to create harmony that reflect integranistic tones of balance between emotion and intellectual assertiveness seemed like way too much. He had no faith in his ability to feel. He is just a victim of catalytic energy weighing heavily toward arguments to choose patterns of avoidance and circumvent the responsibility of positive possibility. He chooses to blanket the healing in silence. And once again, hesitantly, he speaks of an experience premature before the truth has arrived. From his scars interrupted, his wounds never came. Stricken to yield effective narrative underpinning this evaded drive to gear up and pursue collective esteem, while at the same time fearing the cost of falling deeper into the abnormalities of his own emotional displacement. He is a warrior of imagined courage to face issues, committed to the crusade of complexities, which provide him distractions to hide non-apparent unfelt irritants of the heart. He understood both the critical need and the severe consequences associated with self-doubt, still contemplating what comes with the decision to reemerge and reestablish his connection to what he loves so dearly. But who would have believed that a welcoming invitation in a room enriched with innovative passion could wash away the reoccurring theme of any psychosomatic imprint of victimization? Fancied or real, it doesn't really matter. Because still, he speaks of an experience premature before the truth has arrived. From his scars interrupted, his wounds never came. Is it possible to see oneself as the beloved, who can be surprised by grace, allowing expanded emotions to become a gateway to celebration? For he never needed to experience what came after the wounds, for divinity had lifted them gently. Each time he felt trust and opened his heart.
is Hybrid Jazz.
How little we know, how much to discover, what chemical forces flow from lover to lover. How little we understand what touches off that tingle, that sudden explosion when two tingles intermingle. Who cares to define what chemistry this is? Who cares with your lips on mine how ignorant bliss is? So long as you kiss me and the world around us shatters, how little it matters, how little we know. To discover what chemical forces flow from lover to lover. How little we understand what touches off that tingle, that sudden explosion when two tingles intermingle. Who cares to define what chemistry this is? Who cares with your lips on mine how ignorant bliss is? So long as you kiss me and the world around us shatters, oh, how little it matters, how
delicious. That's all I can say about Jackie Ryan. Actually, I could say quite a few things about Jackie Ryan, one of my favorite vocalists on the planet. When you go to Jackie Ryan Music, Jackie Ryan Music, or Jackie Ryan Jazz, you'll find it. Because, look, whenever you want to find something, you always do, right? She's just flipping amazing. She was born to sing this music, and I am sure that John Clayton was thrilled to be working with her. This is from 2013. Jackie was on the show when the CD first came out. Listen Here is what it's called, with John Clayton and friends, including Obed Calvert on drums and Gerald Clayton, John's son, who you know on Hybrid Jazz because he has been here as well. That beautiful piano from those young fingers, God bless him, he's so terrific. How little we know, how little it matters. Jackie Ryan needs to be seen in person to get the full jazz effect of what she can do with that instrument. Oh, Lord, mercy. Saw her a few times, want to see her a few times more. Happened to notice that she's going to be in Fort Lauderdale over the next couple of months, and she'll be in the old hometown, Philadelphia, at Chris's Jazz Cafe, one of the cool places to hear jazz when you go to City of Brotherly Love. Phew! If you want to get involved in what a true jazz vocalist who is monumental, the accolades on her page are crazy. If you go to her website, seriously, get that album, Listen Here, with all that glorious artistry in combination with equally yoking of vocals and sax and piano and everything else that John Clayton, as the consummate band leader, brings to his plate. Amazing. Oh, and it's John Clayton's birthday tomorrow, I understand. So, yeah, that was very timely. Herbie Hancock, we heard from. Whew. Recorded on the 30th of August, 1963. From Inventions and Dimensions. That was Succotash. Suffering Succotash. Paul Chambers on bass. Willie Bobo on drums. Osvaldo Chihuahua Martinez on percussion. Just wonderful. His third album, and it was re-released in the 70s as Succotash. Herbie's going to be in Tokyo and Singapore, and then he's coming to Monterey Jazz. The lineup at Monterey Jazz next month is off the chain. You have to go and see. Oh, the combinations of talent that they have conjured this year, just terrific. We also heard from Norman Woods, our good friend inside the healer. And Problem or Solution was the name of that track. Any track that you will find by Norman is going to be speaking to you. There may be some particular works that speak to you more. I see that Matt in the chat room was quoting Norman through the interview. It was just so wonderful, and it just fills Norman up to know that people pay that much attention. But when you get to something that particularly resonates, it stays with you forever. And I appreciate all the time that he took today on Hybrid Jazz. I really do. Whew. I want to get to a few more pieces of music. Another birthday guy. I promised to play Michael Pope, or Mike Pope, who he has known as on Cold Truth, Warm Heart. That's the name of his CD released this year. This is called Bare Minimum. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Mama Luigi, that sounds good still after all these years. Wow, the theme from Shaft. Does that really need an introduction? I don't think so. The great Isaac Hayes, and we have to remember him because his birthday is August the 20th, 1942. So that means that if he was still with us, he'd be celebrating his 72nd birthday. He left us August the 10th, 2008, but Lord, have much mercy. Did he do some living in those years? Ow! And we're just not talking about the 12 kids, okay? So much that this man did for Southern Soul Music. Stax record label, as a producer, as a writer, writing songs like Soul Man, yeah, making memorable albums like Hot Buttered Soul, being a pioneer in many ways, and awarded the Academy Award for Best Original Song in 72 for Shaft. He was the third African-American after Sidney Poitier and Hattie McDaniel to win an Academy Award in any kind of competitive field from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Just great insight as far as people are concerned. His acting roles, do you remember the Rockford Files? When he was playing that character that knew Jim Rockford in jail. Oh, my God. I just got a flashback in the past couple of days knowing I was going to do something by Isaac. And, of course, you know about South Park, I'm sure. But the voiceover work he did, the compositions, the amazing array of songs that he got little or no credit for. Matter of fact, in going back over the roster of these beautiful songs, I'm just going to point out, where am I going here? Because there's so much to say about them, and we don't have a whole bunch of time. But if you do any kind of look-see about this Tennessee-born man and who found his way to Memphis, and like Norman, we were talking about this earlier, oh, my gosh. Despite some serious odds, Isaac lost his mom at an early age, dad abandoned the family, raised by his grandparents, and offered scholarships. And instead of making use of the scholarships, he made it a point to do manual labor so he could support the rest of his family. He was such a blessing to the world, and we just have to make sure that we remember such a great man. Nobody's perfect in this world. We all have our faults. But you know what? We have to make sure that people who are living, who had some odds against them, rose like the phoenixes that they were always meant to be and had the wherewithal and the heart to give back. And he did in a myriad of ways. Some of that stuff you never heard of with Isaac Hayes, but he made sure that he was a giver. And the world is so much richer for him. If he had never done another song except for When Something Is Wrong With My Baby, it would have been enough. But he did so many more songs than that. It's just crazy. We have to let you know, I'm just wired and tired. Isn't this crazy? T is in Florida now, and that was a crazy day yesterday taking him to the airport, so we're going to make sure we go on. Reagan Whiteside is who you heard. Quantum Drive. The song that you heard was Soul Biscuit. Was that something that she was inspired to do by listening to the Isaac Hayes of the world? Not that there was anybody else but Isaac Hayes, but that period of time from 60s Memphis and 70s Memphis. Oh, my God, so good. Thank you, Reagan, for that. Also, Nick Colleone and Slammin' from his Influences CD, Chicago Heart and Soul. Yes, indeed. 60 seconds to go. Nick is going to be at Shoreline Jazz, and he has a festival, as a matter of fact, that festival this weekend with Mesa, something to keep in mind. Michael Pope, we heard something from his Cold Truth, Warm Heart CD. MikePopeJazz.com has more information. Get Norman Woods, Inside the Healer, Tunes at iTunes, CD Baby, and Amazon.com. We'll see you Thursday with Geneva Renee and maybe a surprise guest too. We don't know. Thank you so much for joining us today on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you, Norman. Love you. Thank you, Beach. Thank you, Matt. See ya.